You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
It's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to Making Tracks as we return to the Town Hall at Fording Bridge, the farthest from 25. We join Paul Naylor and Jonathan Hipkiss as they sat down with Andor's Barry Gingell to discuss his work on the show. But of course, not season two, on this very special episode of Making Tracks.
So we're here at Fording Bridge at Farthest From, and we've got a very special guest with us today, Mr. Barry, and I'm bound to get it wrong, Gingell.
Nailed it.
Whee! We've just been talking about how surnames come about. I found out recently that Naylor, my surname, the origins of that are Nay meaning no and Law meaning brains. So I'm Paul No Brains, and it's lovely to see you here today, Barry. So how did your involvement in Star Wars come about?
Well, I mean, I've been a Star Wars fan forever, and I mean, how I met Dave and like heard about Farthest From is myself and my buddy Rich started selling toys at toy fairs and boot fairs back in sort of the early noughties. And we did that for quite a long time, you know, doing London Film and Comic Cons and things, but just as a hobby, you know, just enough to make enough money to then buy a nice figure, you know.
Yeah.
And so we've been part of it for a while and just love Star Wars. But in terms of working on Andor, I've been doing TV film graphics for 17 years now. And I remember when episode 7 sort of came up and I sort of got some email addresses and I was actually too scared to contact people.
Yeah.
Because it means like that much. Like I was like too scared for them to go, we don't want you, you're awful. But Andor happened because Luke, the production designer, I've been working with him for quite a few years. And he finished up Chernobyl, which won the Emmy, did very well, and he got offered Andor. And we were, funnily enough, the day he got offered it, we were having dinner, and he came from the meeting, was like, look, do you want to come do it with me? I was like, yes, I really want to come and do this with you. And that's how, really. And it was brilliant, because I'd heard it was happening about a year before that, because they did try and get it to go before, and the Blue Swim was very hard to like get it, and they want it to be just right, so...
Yeah.
And I was too scared to contact. I had everyone's addresses, and I was just too scared to like actually try.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that now doing this, I will have passed that fear, because this was like dream job.
Yeah.
So everything else is like, oh, I don't care about it.
I mean, especially when Rogue One. I don't know about yourself, but probably my favourite Disney era film. Love it.
I don't think there's a question on that.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Absolutely fantastic film. Sorry, John.
I've got a Solo.
Oh, well, yeah, Solo's good.
Solo's great.
It's the most Lucas-y of the new era, which is why I like Solo. Yeah.
But Rogue One, when you found out that you were going to be working on something that was related to that, you must have been, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So were you initially just involved from a graphics point of view?
Well, yes. So, yes.
Yeah.
But it's surprising how much freedom you have in there. But it's relative to your team. And so... ultimately, our industry is a collaborative industry, and the problem is some people are better collaborators than others.
Mm.
And I think Andor was so good because the people in there were collaborators. Like Luke Hull, the production designer, is fantastic. You can sit around and in a meeting, he wants to hear your ideas. It isn't, I'm the boss,
yeah.
how dare you talk to me. It's, I think this, I think that. And if he thinks it's a good idea, great. If he's not, he's going to say, bad idea, this is better. And he's always right, you know.
Yeah.
And Tony the same. He actually, if you're in a meeting with him and he's asking a question, he's not asking you to fill time. He wants to hear opinion. He's interested and you can affect change. That guy's the boss, but he's such a good leader that you just want to follow him. It's really interesting.
It's actually quite a rare quality in the film industry.
It really is.
Yeah.
That we, you know, you are up against egos and you are up against like, oh, I want to do this because it's my way and I'm going to stick my oar in.
Yeah.
But there was quite a clear vision for this, and everyone wanted to make it happen, and it did, and it was great.
I'm Brian Herring, BB8 puppeteer, and you're listening to Fantatracks. That'll learn you.
You talk about freedom, something I've always interested in. Force Awakens is in production, and for all intensive purposes, it's quite straightforward. They have six films, it's 30 years later, the look and this. However, yours is so tricky, you have to keep in line, it has to match to the prequels in that timeline, and then Rogue One, and then the originals. Are you? Is it that much freedom in terms of your design work, or are you given a blueprint to go, look, this is a big no, because this is going to clash with...
No, we get to set that, because ultimately this timeline hasn't really, outside of, in Rebels, really, we haven't seen this sort of 5 BBY. What is the transition? And we, in Andor, I'm sure if you've listened to this, you've watched Andor, but we do travel back in time a little bit. We see that clone treatment. Mm-hmm. So that was a discussion to have. And I did actually do a timeline for people because, not everyone's like us. We do have muggles working there. Mm-hmm. So I did put timelines up on the wall and say, at this point, they change from this to this, but how does that change happen? And that you can see that in the Senate building. And that was a meeting we had and sat down, and Luke was very clear, because I offered up obviously the Senate logos and say, look, this is what we've had. What do we think? And it's like, well, there was a big fight, it's been destroyed, what do we do? The cogs now the floor, the cogs are on the tacos, the pods and stuff. Yeah. That's a very deliberate thing, but there is a lot of freedom because we haven't explored this time. Yeah. I did hear one of the directors would walk around just going, we are the gatekeepers. And it's like, okay, mate. And so people did feel that they could do what they wanted. And I don't think, truthfully, Luke would have really been bothered if people said he couldn't. He wanted to do his vision.
Right.
I don't think many people would have gone, I'm going to do an alien planet out of red brick.
Yeah.
But he had that idea very early on. And it worked and looked great. I remember when he told me, I was like, I'm really not sure. But he made it work.
Well, obviously, in the Star Wars galaxy, we're all familiar with Arabesh.
Yeah.
You got to create your own language.
I did. And so, yes. And I arrogantly named it Baziz. And I did get people on Twitter going, you should have called it Bazabesh. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't. And I don't really know. I can't remember why I did it. It was just to see if I could. I'm a graphics guy, I want to do this stuff. We have Arabesh, but unjokingly, there is a serious side of you can't have this galaxy-spanning thing with all these different alien cultures.
And just one.
It doesn't make sense. No. So our show is a slice to the side of what we're used to. So we can fill these gaps.
Yeah.
And we can have real-life stuff, including other languages. So I decided that Ferrix would have its own ancient language. Mm. We see Arabesh over the top and next to, because it's just becoming a thing. They're sort of begrudgingly doing it. Mm. But these stubborn, proud people aren't going to give up their traditions.
Very much the Welsh of the galaxy.
Yes. But I was really, when I was drawing it, I was very conscious that I wanted people to actually be able to translate it.
Yeah.
So there's actually one sign that I did deliberately, which is the Gavilox communication sign. The blue and white red one where Tim goes in to report and on the phone box.
Yeah.
Where I tried to get as many letters in it as I could and very deliberately had an Arabesh letter and a Baziz letter right above it to give people a chance.
It's got the translation.
And I was like, will they make it? And sure enough, I think Orek Fonts on Twitter got it within about 5 minutes.
All these people pausing away and writing it down. Yeah.
And it exists actually all over Ferrix because it was Luke's idea to not just have it as signs but to functionally have it as a decoration. So that's why I drew it as I did. That it works as a pattern. When you put all the letters together, you don't think of it as a language, it just looks as a pattern. And it is if you look on the shops, it is actually on every shop, sort of banded around all the shops on a lot of the signs. And it's just the texture, it's whether you pick
it. Must
up
be
on
nice
it.
To see that throughout it, though.
It is. It's tough because on the bell tower, it's actually on the bell tower.
Right.
And Luke and I did have a big discussion about what colour we actually do it. Is it this sort of oxidey green? Is it this brown? Yeah. Is it whatever? And we ended up going with this off-white cream. And on set, it looked a bit hot.
Yeah.
But on camera, it's almost lost. And I'm worried that that's been lost. Because I actually wrote it out as a mantra of the sort of anvil and what the anvil one ring means, two ring means. Like I wrote it all out, but I don't think we'll ever catch that.
That kind of makes it cooler though, because now people that do know about it will look for it and I think, well, I've seen some other people probably haven't seen.
So maybe.
So how did the MacGuffin role come about?
So I got to be Anton Krieger, basically right place, right time, because I think they were just having a meeting where they were sort of talking about who's going to play this guy, because no one cared, because it's like 4 seconds of screen time, so they're not going to hire some rich, expensive actor. So they'd given it super lots of thought, and I happened to be passing Luke not long after he'd had a little meeting about it, but he offered it up to Tony, and I think I'd sort of had a few dealings with Tony, sadly fewer than we would have liked, because COVID actually did hamper us,
and he did
have to go back to the States, so we didn't get as much FaceTime with him as we would have liked. But so ultimately I was asked to send pictures of myself looking like a terrorist to Tony, which we did, and he was like, "It's fucking perfect, man." That was his response, and he said, "You don't look like an actor," and I don't, you know, I mean, I'm a fat bald guy.
and I'm not very pretty.
And so that worked for what he wanted this sort of stupid ox guy to look like, that's going to like bounce into the spell house and get like shot to pieces. And it was just, I think, as a bit of a nod for like, thanks for being the resident nerd in Andor.
Probably appreciated that you got such good knowledge of the subject matter and thought, let's give this guy a bit of a...
It was a little bit of a gift.
Yeah.
It was lovely. It is for a fan like me to be in it. I know it's like small, but I'm not wearing a helmet and I've got a character name. I'll take it.
Exactly.
I'm a hologram. I'll take it.
Yeah.
You're in the canon. More of a personal question. Something I'm always interested when somebody like you does this. By trade, I'm a stand-up comedian.
Right.
So you're always writing, always thinking of ideas. So my question to you is this relation, on an off day, even on a Sunday, if you're having your Sunday dinner, are you doing something and you go, oh, potentially Star Wars?
I think...
Constantly churning
we
that.
We as nerds see Star Wars everywhere. Mm-hmm. So you're like, I've been looking at that projector thinking how I could Star Wars that up. But... truthfully, you've picked the bad example, because Sunday dinner, nothing's deterring me from a Sunday dinner. But
except maybe today.
Yeah. You are often... Yeah, there are things. I've messaged things to our buyers before when I've like been out and about and I've seen like a cup or a light. You're like, oh my gosh, this would be amazing. But in terms of graphics, like, I'm not going to give like the answer you probably would have given me, but I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking about it all the time. I'm not, I'm off. But when I'm sitting at my desk, that Star Wars is on. When I'm not at my desk, I'm probably thinking about buying Star Wars toys or playing tabletop war games with Star Wars figures. But
so it's 24/7 Star Wars, really.
Yeah. Other universes are available. But I mean, I'm an unashamed nerd. Like, my hobbies is Star Wars and tabletop war gaming.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
When you first got to see Andor completed, or maybe even you saw some rushes of it, I don't know, and you see not only your graphic design work throughout it, which... It's kind of cool because you're watching it differently than how other people are watching it.
True, you do watch it very differently.
Because I've got the same background as you. I'm a designer as well. Right. So I look at things very differently than other people. I'm looking at the background stuff, not the foreground.
Yeah.
And so you'll be going, I'm proud as punch as this. This is made to the final cut. When you saw yourself in that flickering hologram or however you saw yourself, you think, like, oh, I've made it.
it was a little bit. It's... Yes, it is that cool, because it's tough, because we're trying to be British about it, be all very modest about it, but it was really cool. I was like, wow, I am in Star Wars, it's great.
Then rewind it, watch it again, rewind it, watch it.
Well, it's funny, because I hadn't actually told anyone, I told my wife, obviously, but like, and the guys at work, but I hadn't told anyone I was doing it, and I'd gone out to my sister's house, because my mum was there, I was like, oh, can we just check, I want to check if something made it in the show, it was like, it's a surprise, and I popped it on. And my mum and my sister saw it, and I was really like proud, like, oh, they're going to see it, and looked at it, and they went, wait, that guy looks like you, and I'm like, yeah. And I went, oh, it's just like when you were in Law and Order as a photo, and I'm like, no, mum, it's not. Because in Law and Order UK, I believe I'm Eddie Wade, and I kill a judge and steal her car.
So you're a murderer and a terrorist.
Oh, you're the guy. I'm sensing some typecasting coming on here.
I've been an Eastern European like security bodyguard thing. I've been criminals and humans. It's always the bald guy.
You were such
a
nice guy over breakfast. I don't get it.
But I always put myself in as criminal. Pennyworth, I think I'm a criminal on a police board in Pennyworth.
I thought you weren't an actor.
Well, the photo is.
As the graphics guy, often you're saying, hi, can I have an actor for this photo shoot? And they're like, no, use crew. So you tend to walk around and try and find who can be what. But often you need like a fat, bald guy with a beard. And I came ready made. So I'm in a lot of shows as criminals.
I could be your stunt double.
Too free. But no, so my mum wasn't as excited as I wanted her to be. And pals didn't recognise me. Like people didn't, my pals didn't recognise
it. It's almost got a cartoon-like quality to it anyway, hasn't
it? Yes, it does, yeah. Because functionally, it is a digital scan. Like, so I met Michael, and the costume guy who you guys probably know from Celebration interview and stuff.
Yeah.
But he dressed me up. Like, he had a rack of stuff, and was like, let's put this on you. And he actually strapped a rocket launcher to my wrist as well. And I thought, do you think this looks a little bit cosplay? And he was like, you're right, it's awful. And he ripped off and threw it on the ground. No, and I was like, oh, sorry. But they took photos of me, sent it to Tony, and Tony was like, yes. But then on the day I did it, it was about a couple of months later, I had to grow my beard out a bit and stuff, and they took me to Clear Angle Studios at Pinewood, and you just stand there on the spot in a fucking cage of cameras and lights. They press a button, and with 3 seconds, it's taken like 1,500 photos, and it's lit you from top, middle, bottom, like Strike It Lucky style. And so then they've got that digital model that they can light from anywhere.
Stitch it together, as they say. And
exactly, yeah.
Something I was quite interested in yesterday and quite surprised about, you seem to be quite hands-on in the actual production, filming. You talked about being on in Luthen's... How much are you there? How long are you with the production? Are you in post as well?
Sometimes, yes, we are. Like, so some of the... we start kind of late-ish.
Mm-hmm.
The sets are starting, Luke's got his concepts, they know what's happening. Because there's no point in graphics starting and we go, hi, where do you want a sign? And they're like, we don't have a set. So there has to be some groundwork. Week in, we start with discussions and we can start mood boarding or how about this and ideas and da da da. And on season one, we actually had quite a lot of leading time to have these ideas and creative thoughts to get it to where Luke wanted it to be. But we're there to the bitter end, because you can be... On Star Wars, it's a bit different, because there's fewer action props that one holds, because you don't have paper. You know, often you want to, say, like, a Netflix movie, and they're like, oh, can we have an Eastern European business card for a terrorist or whatever? And you're like, cool, let me just go press the Eastern European terrorist print button. You're like, cool, well, you draw it, get it done. But Star Wars, there's fewer of those things, but you are surprised still how many action props are like, oh, can we have, like, a little, like, I don't know, card made out of plastic for whatever? And you're like... Yeah. Great laser guy, cut me a car. But you are on to the bitter end to just facilitate those things. Mm-hmm. And then with post, we do stuff, but that tends to be a little later. They'll just ring up and say, oh, can you just knock us up? Like, I think the ad, like in season one, where Claire's walking through the underground, and there's like, I'd been watching Bad Batch, so I was like into my blockchains. So I was like, you know, must have your blockchain on you at all times, sort of thing. And then it switched to this Pezos ad. I don't know why, but this Pezos thing that they have in Narkina, Tony was mad for it. And it was kind of like, is it Pez? Like, what? Well, you don't really know what it is. But I did this advert that was
pizza,
like some sort of tablet advert thing.
You would think pizza.
And I think I did well starting to feel post for that. When Cyril walks into the shuttle and there's all the screens on the side. So I sort of concepted that up for Luke.
Yeah.
And sort of what the graphics could be. And then I hand that over to TJ and Moen, who are brilliant. Mm-hmm. They're such nice guys and they're brilliant as well. Hand that over and they make it, you know, real. So we do some vis effects, but that's more because I've got a good relationship with Luke. And then he's like, Baz vis effects are asking for this. Can you knock up X? And then we just do it. And also we've kind of got all the graphics. Like,
hi, this is Dave Chapman and you're listening to Fantatrax.
Do you do this sort of like... there, or sometimes you have to work from home and do it from home?
Post was a little bit of home, and like the opening title sequence, actually Luke and I we were having chats about that with Blind, because originally there was a different plan for that. You know how it's the crest that I got away with sneaking in, and I don't know how, a proto rebel crest as I call it, Someone in Moen's team just did that, like the sun coming round and the logo. That was the first thing that was done.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, that's great, and responded really well to that. And it was, what do we do around that? And there were all these ideas. And at one point, I was really trying to push this idea of Stardust to tie it with
Rogue.
Yeah. So, like, the particles of dust come and form this sort of Andor logo, which was always very stony and brick because it was going to be it was going to be graffiti and stuff always. And we'd worked on that for quite a while from home, just with Blind, who are our screen graphics company, and they were going to be doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think Tony said, I've got a friend who kind of does graphics for music videos. He's going to do it. So that Andir logo, like, with the negative logo, I got Andir. But that was actually not with us. So I actually thought we weren't, and my logo wasn't going to get in or anything. But I watched the first episode. That's the first I knew that the logo was going to be on the front. Because we only actually see that, well, see it maybe once, but it exists in very few places in the show. Because it was originally going to be some graffiti all over Ferrix, like this sort of pro-rebel thing. But the script changed and the story changed, which meant that the crest really almost didn't really need to be there.
Yeah.
It's on some boxes in Saw Gerrera's cave.
Yeah.
And I don't think we see it. A stamp I put it on the floor as a mark for Clea to follow, I think.
Right.
On the Clea marks on the floor so they can follow it.
Yeah.
And on Lonnie's lift, when he's going for the speech with Luthen.
Yeah.
Just under the lift panel, I scratched it, scratchiti style, into the metal. As though, like, it's a rebel lift. But the camera needed to drop down about 2 inches to catch it and never did.
Yeah.
So really, this crest is kind of like on the opening of the show, but you barely see it in the show.
So did that come about as a discussion? Did they say we want a more straightforward version of the familiar rebel symbol? Or did you just sort of propose it to them? Or?
I didn't propose it to anyone or talk to anyone about it. I just did it and no one stopped me. Yeah. It really was like a week one, what can I get away with? Which sounds ridiculous, but I was in Star Wars. I was over the moon. I didn't know.
Probably overexcited, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. And truthfully, there was a slight practical element. I counted the other day. I did 87 different variations of what could that be. And actually, Luthen needed a logo. There's actually a Luthen's Gallery logo that's in the brass, cut in brass, in the floor of his rotating door that I don't think we've ever seen. But at one point there was a discussion about, do we hint at his rebel leanings by having a similar logo in his floor? And Luke was like, no, we're not giving, he's a secret guy, why would he give the game away? And I'm like, yeah, fine, you're right, okay. but there was a practical sense of, I think I'm gonna have to graffiti this onto some walls or get some painters to paint it onto walls. So I needed to be as simple as possible. So the idea of this kind of like arc and a cut told the story to fans that it's like the rebel logo, the Phoenix bird is become sort of, as we all know, but without me having to paint the line and the line and the line.
But the clever thing about it, and you'll appreciate this as a graphic designer, is that it's so simplistic, yet everybody recognises it straight away as being that.
Yeah, and it does make me happy. And what I like is some people have really looked into it deep and gone, like, is it like a bird swooping down? And I'm like, I like that one. I might pretend that's real. Or is it like the Death Star lens lining up? And I'm like, that's good. I think there's just something inherently claw-like about it, sort of dangerous about it. And I wanted it more dangerous than the Phoenix bird rising, because Andor's more dangerous than that. And so there's an element of that.
Yeah.
But I
looked at it as being like the origins of the rebellion,
and
therefore the more familiar version of that logo that we all know now is the evolved version of it.
That was exactly what was happening. That's why I call it it's on Atrus, the system on Luthen was the proto-rebel logo, because that's how I wanted it to be, a simple cut that then morphs to this. And I know we've kind of got Sabine's Phoenix bird that morphs into that, but I was all high on being on Star Wars.
If you want to be part of the action, visit fanthatrax.com or be sure to comment, like and share on our social media feeds at Fanthatrax. Send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@fanthatrax.com. Subscribe, leave a review, preferably a 5-star one, on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Temple for composing the Fanthatrax intro, Adam O'Brien for our making tracks opening music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Tune in to Good Morning Tatooine. It's live Sunday evenings, 9 o'clock UK, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Facebook, YouTube and Twitch, and check out our Fanthatrax Radio Friday night rotation every Friday at 7 o'clock UK time for new episodes of the Phantom Down Under, Planet Layer, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines, Collecting Tracks, Cannon Fodder, and special episodes of Making Tracks, and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock UK time for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. And remember, Fanthatrax.com, our social media feeds, Fanthatrax TV and Fanthatrax Radio are absolutely so no Patreon, Buy Me A Coffee, Kickstarter or Indiegogo required to stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news.
Until we catch up with you again, may the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fanthatrax Radio, it's Planet Leia.